I love having Chris Carter from the Post-Gazette on Fridays because he covers Pitt, he covers the Steelers, so we get all the football opinions from him on Fridays. And today, in fact, we'll go behind enemy lines with him and find out a little bit more about SMU. Behind Enemy Lines brought to you by Monster Brewing, and he joins us on the Fan Hotline presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. Chris, always good to see your face, buddy. How you doing today?
Same here, Crowd Man. How you doing?
Oh, I am outstanding. Two massive college football games tomorrow. The Steelers are off, which means that the college football games get center stage here, at least for a little bit on the show. And I'm wondering, Chris, after the Holstein announcement from Pat Narduzzi on 93.7 The Fan the other day, I thought the line would move. I'm still perplexed by Pitt being a 7.5-point underdog. Can you help me understand the why behind that?
You know, I can only think that part of it is if you look at SMU's overall offensive production and defensive production, they rank like just ahead of Pitt in some areas, just behind Pitt and others, and you think, oh, well, this just matchup will just work in their favor. Or maybe you're just thinking SMU's home advantage is just that much greater. But to be honest, looking at the way that SMU plays, the way they try to play defense, not the way they call their plays, but the style of play, how fast they play, it's very similar to Pitt. That, you know, they want to play fast. They want to simplify their coverages. They want to just blitz you and make you rush out of your scheme. And so, you know, I look at that and I say, okay, well, whose defense do I give more credit for playing the way? And I think Pitt's defense is more dangerous with the way that they create turnovers, and especially with the way that SMU's quarterback was giving turnovers last week. And Eli Holstein hasn't been completely clean. I think he's had two rough games, even if the stats won't say it in the last game. And that could be a factor. But I have to think maybe there's something Vegas knows about Holstein and his SMU defense that's going to have him have another rough day. But, you know, I think that these are rather evenly matched teams in a lot of ways. And this should be a game that maybe it's more like a 3-point spread than a 7.1.
That's what I thought, too. I was stunned when I saw it was SMU -7.5. And you wondered about the Holstein stuff. And then you find out he's fine. He's going to play. And it's still 7.5. I'm wondering if part of it, you bring up the turnovers. So Pitt, they take the ball away from McCord 5 times, 3 of which return for touchdowns. And you can't count on that every week. Right. And I'm wondering if SMU, while it's a negative when you turn it over, 6 times, you can also spin it positive that you're good enough to go on the road, turn it over 6 times, and still find a way miraculously to win the football game.
Yeah, that's certainly part of it, right? Is that, you know, it's funny. I asked Pat Narduzzi about how they try to generate turnovers. And he said, well, we don't plan getting 5. We just try to read our keys and set up opportunities and let the guys go play. And I think that's the thing that's really impressive about this defense. This was a defense that you look at guys, the 3 starting linebackers, Brandon George, Rasheem Biles, Kyle Lewis, all 3 of those guys have had phenomenal seasons. And those were 3 guys that, you know, weren't getting on the field much last year. They were guys that people were like, ah, well, they're not that big of a factor. And now they absolutely are. And they're generating all these looks here. And on Pitt's defensive front, you got Sean Fitzsimmons coming in and Nick James on the defensive line, Nekai Johnson playing very well, Nate Matlack teaming up with Jimmy Scott. They have guys up front now that are difference makers. And it took some time for those guys to emerge and figure themselves out and figure how they work together. But that's the kind of stuff that I think might neutralize and create these turnover opportunities is with them winning up front. One factor that I think that people might be counting on is SMU does have a very good running back in Breshard Smith. He's a speedster. He's quick in space. He makes you miss, especially when he gets to that second level. Good luck to, you know, defenders in open space. But Pitt has been very good about limiting running backs to even getting there. They try to bottle you up. If you get yards, you're getting them up the middle and you're kind of in a condensed space where, hey, you might have got 6 or 7, but a safety's bringing you down, and then they're going to adjust and try to take away that the next play. SMU's been very good at that balance attack with Smith and their quarterback Jennings, and they've been able to work with that. Pitt has to focus to take away that run game, force Jennings to be one-dimensional, and that would go a long way to them winning, creating those turnovers, because that's exactly what they did to Syracuse. Syracuse, not a good running football team last week. And I said going in, if they, you know, I was talking with Stephen Thompson in our pregame clip. We talked about, hey, if they take away the run, they can focus more on Kyle McCord. And boy, did they take away the run, and did they focus on Kyle McCord.
I watched your little clip there. It's very well produced, Mr. Carter. Very good stuff. Fan Morning Show brought to you by Guardian Protection, your hometown home and business security company. Chris Carter, of course, from the Post-Gazette, joining us here on the Fan Morning Show. You mentioned Eli Holstein's struggles. Could have had an interception on that first drive against Syracuse. Did throw an interception, gets taken back because of the roughing the passer. Apart, you say apart from that, it's tough to get into a rhythm offensively when you're only on the field for 18 minutes because of all those turnovers. So I think that's part of it, yeah, against Syracuse, too. Did throw that 29-yard touchdown that was a beaut late in the game. But overall, the last eight quarters for Holstein, not what the first five games had been. What do they need him to get back to doing? And do you think he can get there in specifically in this game?
I think he can, particularly because it's kind of getting back to the basics. I think one thing Eli Holstein has done too much of in these games, he's been looking, I even noted it like live during some of the SMU plays, he would be looking downfield. He's looking for the home run ball. He's looking for the big play. And sometimes it's like, hey, man, don't look for the big play. Take what is there. Read your keys on defense. Don't be worrying about where you go. Just worry about, hey, this is what they're doing. I'm going to have one first read, second read, third read, run. Like, you know, that's what you're doing here. Because if they're taking away your third read, most likely they're not also watching you. And Eli Holstein has shown his ability to run. And I think that he's gotten a little caught up in looking for the big plays that have set things up. And if I'm Cade Bell, the Pitt offensive coordinator, I'm looking at Eli and saying, hey, Eli, what got you three touchdowns, passing touchdowns in five straight games was sticking to my system and going through those reads and making those plays. And even in games like against Cincinnati, where he struggled in the first half and then he improved in the second, it was because he started taking the reads that were there. If he can get back to doing that, he can get back to maybe averaging three touchdown passes a game like he did literally through five games each. But I agree with you. He hasn't been his best, but again, he's a redshirt freshman. He gets time to grow, and there's no better way to grow than to be undefeated through seven games.
Exactly.
But right, so like, you know, it's not like oh man, Eli Holstein's bad, but I do think it's a point where, hey, Eli, you have this opportunity to go back and fix some things so that you can still have a very strong season while you haven't lost a game. There's a unique opportunity here for Eli Holstein. I'm very intrigued to see if he takes it at SMU on Saturday night.
I have a Steelers question for you. Hopefully we have enough time to get to it. But before we do, I said this a couple segments ago, and I got a fair amount of pushback. I think the SMU Pitt game is way more important than the Ohio State-Penn State game. Like, I'm a cynic. We're going to see how it all works out in the college football playoff, but you're going to get your champions in. Then they're going to have to find seven other teams to put in this thing. I think if Penn State loses, because it's damn Penn State, they're going to get in. I think Ohio State, with two losses and a presumed victory over a good Indiana team, I think they get in. Meanwhile, I think Pitt probably needs to win the ACC. I think SMU probably needs to win the ACC to get in. Thoughts?
I mean, That's very good logic there, Crowman. I hadn't thought about that.
Let's go. Finally. Mom, I've done it.
But silly. But in all seriousness, Adam, like, looking at this, I think you're right. Like, if Penn State or Ohio State lose that game, they're still very much in the college football playoff picture. We'll get to see Tuesday night what the actual college football playoff rankings are, right? Because the AP poll, the coaches poll, those aren't carrying the weight anymore that they used to. However, I do look at this, and you know, I think Trey Tipton, former Pitt receiver, pointed this out. Is like, this Pitt team is tied for the lowest AP ranking of a 7-0 Power 5 team in the AP poll history. So like, Pitt's in a unique position where it's showing, and it's funny, you know, I think it's the ACC has shown this. It don't matter if you go undefeated and win the conference right, all season long. That don't guarantee you a top four spot in the playoffs. Now, this year, the structure of the playoffs is different, but that should show Pitt. If they win out and then lose to Miami at the end of the season, I'm not sure if I even guarantee them in the playoffs there. I would put them in the playoffs, but would the College Football Playoff Committee? I don't know.
I do
because
think
of how the ACC has been treated.
I'm happy you bring that up. I do think that is Pitt's best chance if they are a one-loss team, is if they play in the conference championship game and then lose to Miami. Yeah.
I agree. But, sorry.
By the by, Tuesday would be election day. Also, the first college football playoff rankings. And the NFL trade deadline.
NFL trade deadline.
It is going to be a hellscape on X.com. It is going to be wild times. All right, last thing here for you, Chris. Before the season, I think reasonable people could look at all the quarterbacks in the AFC and go, Russell Wilson might be the 10th best quarterback. Well, we did the exercise earlier. I think right now he's 5th or 6th. Agree? And it's only been two games, so you have to do some extrapolating. Yeah, but I think he's in a tier above, based on the way some other guys have played, based on the way he's played, mm-hmm. than where I thought he would be coming into the year.
You know, I think it's fair to say, hey, have people overlooked him early on? Because, you know, I think that when you look at how he's played in two games, it's been impressive. And it's fair to say, hey, you know, would he do that if that? But I mean, you look at what he's bringing to the Steelers offense, the efficiency he's bringing. He's not being Lamar Jackson. He's not being Superman carrying an offense. He's not being Josh Allen like that. And no one's putting him in that category. But as far as the guys who are being the balanced caretakers of the offense that distribute the football, he's one of the best at doing that. Like, look at Jared Goff for the Lions. Jared Goff isn't being Superman. He's being a great decision maker, and he's letting the powers of the Lions offense do the work. And I think that's what Mike Tomlin wanted to see if Russell Wilson could do when he got to Pittsburgh. And right now, if you looked at all quarterbacks in the NFL with at least 50 dropbacks on the season, Russell Wilson has the second highest yards per attempt average on passing the football. That's efficiency. So I think fifth or sixth is fair because, you know, it accounts for the Allens, the Mahomeses, the Burrows, and those guys in the AFC. But, like, right after them, like, sure, you take them. And I think where if you're the Steelers, if you're comfortable, you're excited about is because – all those other teams, they're investing in quarterback. Lamar, Allen, Burrow, Mahomes, they all got money. But Russell's $1 million. And you have a chance with this young offense around him, with the run game getting better. You saw how it got better in the second half of the season last year. Let's see if it gets better this year. But it's already been better this year. You look at young receivers like Calvin Austin, him making plays both in special teams and in the receiving game and connecting more with Russell Wilson. That's a big factor. And this defense that has, yes, older players, but younger players who are getting better and the new free agents who are fitting in. I think the Steelers are much more dangerous in this AFC playoff outlook going into the second half of the season than people thought they would be at the start of the season, particularly because of how they've meshed together well in defense. They're figuring things out with an injured offensive line. And now Russell Wilson is being a good leader who pieces it all together, makes it not about himself, and makes it about, hey, let's do this. Let's use the sums of our parts to beat teams on offense.
Man, we spent the whole first hour or so of the show talking about the Steelers relative to all the other playoff teams in the AFC, and I don't know that people around here think of it this way. Yeah, the Steelers are flawed, no doubt. So are all these other teams. I mean, you put the Chiefs in a category of their own, I'm going to give them benefit of the doubt because they don't need to have a spectacular statistical season for me to say, okay, they're the favorite in the AFC. I don't think anybody looks at it that way. But among everyone else, I think the Steelers are just as good, maybe, as anybody else. Chris, this was awesome, man. We appreciate your time, as always. Are you headed out to Dallas?
No, that's going to be Stephen Thompson. Our guy's going to be headed to Dallas. I'm staying in Pittsburgh to kind of catch my breath during the Steelers bye week. But, of course, we'll be at the Peterson Event Center for Pitt Basketball's opening night. All preview stuff on the season will be coming out throughout this weekend. Great stuff there at the Post-Gazette. Check us out at post-gazette.com.
That's right. In 2 weeks from today, the Backyard Basket Brawl. So how about that?
Let's go.
All right, Chris. Awesome stuff, man. Take care now. Thanks again.
Thanks, Growl, man.
One of the best. One of the most hardworking guys in the industry, Chris Carter of the Post-Gazette. You can tweet us, brought to you by South Hills Kia, Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. You can text us, brought to you by Edgar Snyder & Associates, a personal injury law firm where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. Breaking news regarding this Pitt-SMU game, actually. We'll get to that coming up next. And did the Jets' performance last night have you looking any different at the Steelers? Brian Bacow, the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, going to join us at the bottom of the hour. Take a look at the Steelers at their midway point, really. Biggest surprises, biggest disappointments. We've got around the NFL segment coming up later on in the hour. Lee Sterling at 9, having a fun morning. Jets beat the Texans last night. We'll get to that in 1 minute. But first, breaking news on the much-anticipated ranked-on-ranked matchup tomorrow night between the University of Pittsburgh and SMU. Kevin Jennings, the quarterback for SMU, has been ruled eligible to play. That's not the right way of putting it. I got caught in a word pretzel there, and I screwed up. But he's been cleared to play. There it is. Found it. Found it. A little too much candy last night. Plus, my neighbors were handing out beer, Callis. Neighbors right behind us, they handed out beers to any adults that would want one.
I was going to say, hopefully not the children.
No, no. Good point. Quality point of clarification there. Yeah, just to adults. You had to show your ID. All right, that's not true. But I had no less than four neighbors handing out beers. And then there was candy. So my apologies. Kevin Jennings, quarterback for SMU. He's going to play in this game. Pete Thamel's reporting. Pete Thamel is never wrong. And he's a decent enough passer. 1,600 yards on the season. 10 touchdowns, 5 picks. But he's a good runner, too. About 5 yards a carry. So Pitt's starting quarterback going to be good to go. And SMU's starting quarterback going to be good to go in this game tomorrow night. You can listen to the game as well as all the pregame coverage right here on 93.7 The Fan. So the Jets, they actually win. Vegas seems to know things, right? That's why Pitt fans, maybe you're nervous. SMU was 7.5-point favorite. Well, the Jets were a 2-point favorite last night at 2-6 against the 6-3 Texans team. And I think that game's really telling. Really telling. We had people texting in earlier when we were talking about the Steelers and where they belong in the hierarchy of the AFC. And a lot of folks saying, okay, pump the brakes a little bit. Ben Roethlisberger saying pump the brakes a little bit. They beat the Jets. They beat the Giants. These teams aren't good. Well, the Jets just beat the Texans. And think about how good Russell Wilson looked in that Jets game. 37 points, over 400 yards. He was great. The offense was great. C.J. Stroud, who 10 out of 10 people would take over Russell Wilson, he went 11 for 30 last night and 191 yards. He got sacked 8 times. Now, a lot of that courtesy of our old friend Kendrick Green, who the Texans continue to play on the interior of their offensive line. My God, that guy sucks. He sucks so bad, and they keep playing him. Stroud gets sacked 8 times for 56 yards, 11 out of 30. I come away from last night's game feeling better by this about the Steelers by extension, because they were able to not just beat the Jets, but handle them. And I come away feeling like the Steelers are a better team than the Texans. And guess what? That's where the Steelers are in the standings right now. The number 2 seed in the AFC, the Texans sitting there in that 3 spot. We'll get into this more in the 9 o'clock hour. The Steelers are far from a perfect bunch. But when you compare the Steelers relative to other AFC contenders, not named the Chiefs, I think you can make a compelling case, and I'll try to, that the Steelers are the second best team in this conference. We'll talk to Brian Batko about the Steelers, where they sit at the midway point coming up next. We'll go around the NFL coming up in the next segment. A key injury in one of the marquee games of the weekend. Should have Steelers fans paying attention. We'll tell you what that is and the impact it could have. Right now, we're joined by Brian Batko of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. First of all, good morning to you, Brian. How are you?
Good morning, Crowley. How are you?
You tired from trick-or-treating?
Not really. We live on a dead-end street, so right now, while the kids are pretty young still, we can convince them just to go up and back and call it a night and then eat some candy. So that's what we did. We were all wrapped up by like 6:40, 6:45.
Do the kids like hockey? Because a dead-end street is the perfect place to develop tremendous young hockey players.
No, not yet. But, I mean, between that, you know, basketball goal at one point, we should have a lot of activities to do in the cul-de-sac.
The beard also well manicured this morning. I just want to throw that out there before we get in the meat and potatoes of this thing. I mean, the beard is looking AA+.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, I don't think I'm going to shave until the Steelers are out of Super Bowl contention. So, see if this thing keeps going.
All right, let's get right into this then. That beard's going to grow for a long time. I mean, these Steelers, they're very good. And you look at the AFC, and I wonder, how many great teams are there, if any, apart from the Kansas City Chiefs, and even they're not playing well. We'll get to that. But biggest surprise positive for the Steelers at the halfway park for you, Brian?
I think the play of Russell Wilson through these two games, you know, I was skeptical about turning to him when Mike Tomlin did. And I thought even if that did turn out to be the right move, it may not pay dividends immediately because of the rust factor. And, you know, credit to him and credit to the team and the supporting cast, even when there were some rusty rust moments, they were able to respond. And not only did they not cost them games, but they ended up winning pretty convincingly, at least against the Jets. You know, the Giants were friskier than anticipated. But yeah, I think the ability that he's been able to bring to the offense, elevating really the whole system under Arthur Smith, has been a pleasant surprise for them, and one that gives you a shot of optimism going into the second half here.
Has he elevated guys enough so that you don't need another guy, so that you don't need a Darius Slayton or a Jacoby Myers or an Adam Thielen or any of the other potentially available options?
I don't want to say you need one, but I would still probably want to get one if I were in that GM chair. I mean, it's just, not only could you use an upgrade talent-wise, maybe over a Van Jefferson as your de facto number two. I mean, we've seen Calvin Austin make more plays as the quote-unquote number three than Jefferson. That's just been the flow of things so far. It's a bit of a by-committee approach, but you also just don't really have much depth. I mean, behind Pickens and Jefferson, you've got a couple small guys in Austin and Scotty Miller. You've got, you know, Roman Wilson, if he ever gets back. You know, the receivers coach did tell us the other day they're going to need him down the stretch. Maybe he was just trying to polish that up a little bit. But yeah, I mean, there's just not really a lot of other NFL caliber high-end talent on the roster right now. And you know, you get into the likes of Brandon Johnson and Quez Watkins on the practice squad. Hey, I think it's worth going out there trying to flip a late pick for somebody to a team who's desperate here at the deadline.
I'm with you, and I think just when you're throwing out as many eligibles as you can, you need an upgrade. But the Pickens injury situation, if there were to be one, is what scares me more than anything else, because I do think they can continue to win games with what they've got. I don't know how fluidly they could engineer victory if George Pickens were to get hurt and all of a sudden you're bumping Van up and you're bumping any number of those guys up. Who's been the biggest
installing the triple option at that point, Crowman?
Maybe you have Justin Fields on the field at the same time as Russell Wilson. How about that?
That his value would go up right away if they lose George Pickens. Then they're going to the flex bone offense.
Who do you think's been the biggest disappointment so far?
I'd say probably Broderick Jones.
Yeah.
You know, our mutual buddy Ray Fittipaldo has a story on him up on the Post Gazette site right now, after talking to O-line coach Pat Meyer on Wednesday. And Pat Meyer, I think, even caught himself a little bit being so bluntly honest about Jones, saying that he needs to focus on each and every play. That's not really what you want to hear. It was in the context of an overall encouraging response from his position coach. Broderick's got the right mentality, the right attitude. He wants to learn. But Meyer didn't really mince words. I mean, made it clear that, obviously, which we can all see from the outside, I mean, the tape is the tape. The numbers with the penalties are just, you can't argue them. He's not learning fast enough. He's not picking it up fast enough. And it's been a weak spot for them on their O-line thus far.
It's the bye week, so it's time for questions like this, where you can look ahead to the offseason and people can't yell at you and say, no, tell us about this Commanders game. So, do you think there's a chance, and what percentage chance would you put on it, that Dan Moore Jr. is back next year?
I mean, I think there's a chance. Every passing week here that Jones struggles, I think the chance goes up incrementally. I still would not put it above 50-50, but I don't know, maybe 20-25%, just because Jones isn't playing well. So you're not going to write the guy off after 2 years, and maybe there's something to be said for moving him back to his more natural feeling position. But also Troy Fautanu coming off of a pretty significant injury himself. And do you feel like you need another, you know, gap year or bridge year? The only thing that would give me pause on that front, though, Crowley, just from talking to Dan Moore and being around him, I don't think he would settle for like a 1 year deal again and say, oh, I'm going to prove myself. No. He is going to say, look, I've done what I've done these last 4 years, held off all challengers for this position, gotten better. I am going to get the bag. If it's not here, sorry, Steelers. Thanks for the opportunity. Thanks for drafting guys at my spot. in the first round every year, I'm going to get paid somewhere, and it's going to be a multi-year deal.
Last thing here for you, Brian. If you are looking at this Steelers offense, and forget the wide receiver thing, we've done that, and thinking, okay, you need to see something, or there's a fly in the ointment here, what might that be?
I mean, I'll go back to my original answer. I still need to see more from Russ. It's been good thus far, but a little bit worried. Just, I mean, he turns 36 next month. He's moved pretty well when he's needed to kind of slide and give himself better arm angles in the pocket. But man, I mean, it with those older quarterbacks, it can always look good until it doesn't. So if teams start to heat him up a little bit and try to counter what they've been doing thus far in the passing game, then he's also going to need to have a response, and Arthur Smith might need to have a, you know, some different schematic wrinkles to throw out at them. And couple that, Crowley, with if the O-line pass protection gets worse at some point this season and Russ is running for his life, then that could make this offense bogged down.
Yeah, I'm not saying this is going to happen. I don't know what's going to happen, but if the Steelers are down 10 points, something like that, and play action's not a threat, and you're not getting them on the edge, and it's just traditional drop-back passing, can this offensive line hold up? I don't think so right now. I'm not sure. And we haven't really had to see it yet with Russell Wilson. Brian, this was awesome. As always, man, appreciate the time. And we'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, my pleasure. See you guys.
Great man. Hard worker. Brian Bacco, Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Coming up next, we do go around the NFL. Big injury, perhaps, in one of the marquee games of the weekend that absolutely affects the Pittsburgh Steelers. What is it? We'll tell you when we go around the NFL. There you go, 50-minute mark on the Fan, brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram, Route 19 in Peters Township, celebrating 50 years in the South Hills. And I don't want this music to end. I love this song. I love the Macklemore. But it's also time to go around the NFL, brought to you by Champ Tires, Pittsburgh trusted tire source since 2009. And a big one this weekend in the AFC North and just in the AFC playoff picture at large, the 5-3 Broncos on the road in Baltimore against the 5-3 Baltimore Ravens. And the Ravens are a 9-point favorite, but the Ravens have already lost at home to the Las Vegas Raiders. And then, oh wait, there's more. There's this. Lamar Jackson hasn't practiced in each of the last 2 days. He was listed as not having practiced on Wednesday. It was a rest day. And then yesterday, he didn't practice, and it was listed as, what, an ankle and a knee. And so I don't know that he's not going to play, but he's definitely banged up. And some Baltimore Ravens beat reporters who were in the locker room after their loss to the Cleveland Browns said that he appeared to be in discomfort after the game. So this is a big one. And if the Broncos win, all of a sudden they're 6-3. Ravens win, they're 6-3. But if the Ravens lose, this is how math works, they're 5-4. And if the Steelers were to beat the Washington Commanders, they could have a 2-game lead in the division. That's big. And normally, in years prior, when Baltimore's been really good, they handle teams at home. They beat bad teams. In Denver, listen, at 5-3, I'm not buying into it. Their defense is good. I do think Sean Payton deserves a lot of credit. I still don't think they're a good team. Better Ravens teams blow this one out of the water. I think it's going to be a game. I'm throwing money on the Denver Broncos this Sunday. Now, maybe not to win the game, but I'm taking the 9 points. Baltimore has blown leads, as they did in the Las Vegas game. Baltimore has had trouble holding on to leads going back for a year plus. Their defense is a sieve, and I think they're going to have some trouble running the ball against these Denver Broncos. Lamar's hurt. He's probably not going to be as much of a factor in the running game, so that's a big one. Then you got Los Angeles and Cleveland. And Los Angeles is fighting for a playoff spot in the AFC. They're sitting right now at 4-3. They don't have any wide receivers. Herbert's actually played well, but they're not having him throw the ball all over the yard against a Cleveland team that won last week And they just need a little momentum. Oddly, I want to see the team with a better record here win the football game. I don't want to see Cleveland gain steam. I want Cleveland to continue to be dysfunctional. They beat Baltimore last week. We're all rooting for Cleveland. Knock Baltimore down a peg. That's exactly what happened. Plus, I kind of want Jameis. I wanted Jameis to win that game, to twist the knife, to throw some salt in the wound of Deshaun Watson, because that guy sucks. The organization should be ashamed of themselves. Now I want it to flip. I want LA to win. That'll get them to 5-3, and they're a slight favorite, 1.5 points over Cleveland. I want them to win because I don't want Cleveland to get on a little bit of a roll here. They're a much better team with Jameis Winston at quarterback. This is a team that was constructed to be good if they had good quarterback play. They've dealt with some injuries. Okay. I want Cleveland to sleepwalk through the rest of their schedule. And at 3-6 with consecutive victories, you can convince yourself, hey, maybe we're still in this thing. The Jets at now 3-6 convince themselves, hey, maybe we're still in this thing. Cincinnati sitting there at 3-5. Hey, maybe we're still in this thing. Beat the Browns. Get them to 2-7. Have them be sellers at the deadline. Maybe Jameis Winston gets moved. That's what I'm looking for. So the two games I'm really paying attention to this weekend, of course, the AFC North matchups. And then you do have Cincinnati. And they're taking on Las Vegas. They're at home. They're a 7-point favorite. I think they take care of business. I'm not buying into Cincinnati, but I do think at home, where they haven't won a game yet this year at 0-4, I think they get that first dub against LV. Let's talk about some of these big matchups, college and pro, SMU, Pitt, Penn State, Ohio State, some of these AFC North matchups with our guy Lee Sterling coming up next. But first, fan weather brought to you by Sun Chevrolet. Visit Sun Chevrolet Washington Road in McMurray or at sunchevy.com. Today, a high is 69, low 47.